Hello, everyone. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and I'm back together with my off-screen partner, John Steele. John, how's it going?
Very well, Stu. Thanks for coming back. I think the listeners are probably getting bored of hearing me droning on to nobody in particular. So thanks for coming back and banging.
No problem at all. In the J2 pod I just released, I think to you and Ben and Sam for picking up the slack. But yeah, I'll just say it here as well. Like, I've been, to the people who are listening to this, I've been off with some wisdom tooth shenanigans, a wisdom tooth that had ideas above its station. But fortunately, that's no longer an issue. And I'm back ready to talk some J3, John. And we're going to focus on the promotion race because it is kind of wild at the moment. We're going to bypass Akita until we speak to them in the context of their win at Ruaso Kumamoto. But at the moment in J3, there are three teams within a point of each other in the race for second place. We have Sagamihara, who are in second place on 53 points. In third are AC Nagano Passero. They're in third place on 52 with a goal difference of 18. And in fourth place are FC Gifu, who owns 52 points also, but they have a goal difference of plus 13. Now, we'll take the games of those three teams as the key games, John. And the first one we're going to look at is Sagamihara and their game against Gainari Tottori, which ended in a 3-2 win for Sagamihara. It looked, from the highlights and just from looking at the scoreline and the stats, that it was a close game and an exciting game at the top of the table. What did you see from this outing? Because it's not often that Sagamihara are involved in these kind of high-scoring thrillers, is it?
No, I think that's right. And I think it's also very rare that Sagamihara beat anybody by more than a one-goal margin, isn't it? They quite recently have been getting the 1-0s and the 2-1s. So 3-2 is them scoring more goals than usual, I would suggest, but having the same kind of slim, narrow margin of victory that we are used to. I think the first half performance was pretty standard Sagamihara, wasn't it? They were 1-0 up at the break after that header from Masashi Wada, which went in off the post. I have to say, one reason why they scored three goals at the weekend might have been because Tottori's goalkeeper, Ken Tajiri, did not have a particularly impressive afternoon. I thought he could have done better with that first goal, certainly in the first half for Sagamihara. And then, yeah, Tottori did come back into it, didn't they? They showed some quality themselves. Great finish from Yuya Taguchi to make it 1-1. 9 minutes into the second half. But then Sagamihara stepped up a gear, I think you could probably say, in the last quarter. They went back in front when Takahide Umabachi swept in a low drive from the edge of the box. I think, again, though, I don't know if you'll agree with me, Tajiri, the goalkeeper, should have done better with this. I think he was too easily beaten.
Yes.
And then as J3 teams are want to do, Stew, Tottori press the self-destruct button. They were too casual at the back, pissing around in possession. You don't want to do that when there's a striker like Romulo around, and he robbed one of the Tottori defenders. I think it was Kei Oshiro, and went through to score his 12th goal of the season and make it 3-1. It was a weird game. I think the game was over at that point, but Tottori did pull another goal back. Naoto Misawa, who's had a really impressive season, I think, in Tottori's midfield, scored a good goal from the edge of the box to make sure it finished 3-2. Sagamihara, a weird side that I've mentioned a few times. I'm still not sure how good they are. I mean, they're in second place with four games left, so they're obviously pretty good, but they never seem to blow teams away or completely control matches. Having said that, I couldn't remember the last time they'd lost a game, and I went back. They're on a 15-match unbeaten run at the moment.
That's pretty epic.
It's pretty epic, yeah. Well, I mean, the season's only 34 games long, so virtually half a season unbeaten. So they must be doing something right. And yeah, maybe from watching the highlights and the kind of scraps of live games that I've seen, maybe I've missed something. So yeah, they're up there, and I suppose we have to say that Destiny's in their own hands, isn't it? If they can stay unbeaten between now and December the 20th, then they'll probably hang on to second place and go up to J2 even.
That's what I was about to say. I was about to say they're the only team with the Destiny in their own hands. If they win out, they'll go up. It's that simple. Mm. And, you know, they're not the most kind of attractive of sides to watch. But then, you know, at the moment, would you rather be Rurasa Kumamoto's position of being nice to watch but very flaky? Or would you rather be in Sagamihara's position of being pretty attritional but being able to get the job done when it counts? And I think that the answer is going to be Sagamihara. And I think that, yeah, for them to have their destiny in their own hands, four games to go, then you'd say they're the favourites right now, I guess. Mm. But having said that, they're only 1 point above the other two sides that are chasing them. We'll move on to Nagano. They were coming into this game off the back of some kind of ropey form, and they left it late to beat Imabari at home in a game in which they dominated, but it took until the 80th minute. Forward Hiroshi Azuma, he scored with 10 minutes to go to give Nagano a very, very precious 1-0 win. I think that it was desperately needed for Nagano. I think they were the team, what we were saying about a month ago, who had their destiny in their own hands. But some very kind of average performances up until this point took it out of their own hands. But they needed this, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And I think we should, as you mentioned, their form was ropey going into this game. Probably worse than ropey, wasn't it? Three straight defeats coming into this home game against Imabari. And yeah, I think we should probably mention that they got the best possible start in just the third minute, didn't they? Imabari's captain, very experienced campaigner, Keishi Kusumi, was shown a straight red card. I don't know why players do this. I mean, we just talked about the last man being robbed and giving away a goal in the Sagamihara match. And then, yeah, when I was watching highlights, the exact same thing happened, or almost identical thing happened here. He carelessly lost possession. I think the Nagano forward who robbed him was Ibuki Yoshida. And Kusumi didn't really have an option other than to tug his shirt and pull him down. So it's what I've come to refer to as a dog show, Stu. Denial of goal scoring opportunity. It was a straight red. And to be honest, you know, the referee, he didn't really give the referee any choice. So going down to 10 men just the third minute, you know, you're going to fancy your chances of winning against the team in that situation. So it was pretty much attack versus defence for the rest of the game. I thought Imabari gave a good account of themselves in the circumstances, but Tomofumi Fujiyama hit the crossbar midway through the first half for Nagano, and they were piling on the pressure. But as you mentioned, it wasn't until 10 minutes from full time that the goal from Hiroshi Azuma finally came. So I think Nagano won, and they had to win. But considering they played against 10 men for virtually the full 90 minutes, you know, if we include stoppage time, I don't think we can say the performance was that impressive. And I'm not sure what conclusions we can draw. I think what I will say on the Imabari side, they'll probably be reasonably pleased to have run Nagano so close, you know, with you know, being a man down. But Nagano got the 3 points. And at this stage, that's the most important thing, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, no doubt. And they needed it, and they got it by hook or by crook, which kind of keeps them above FC Gifu. Now, Gifu went to Kamatamari Sanaki, and we're going to talk about another sending off, I think, when we talk about this game. But Shota Kawanishi's second half goal from all of 1 centimeter out, I think, was enough to give Gifu the win. It wasn't a particularly kind of nice game to watch, but it suddenly got a bit too interesting 20 minutes from the end. I think we're going to talk about dog saws again here when Koya Nagisawa was sent off. But yeah, another team that kind of just had to get it done, and they did get it done, John.
Yeah, I actually think it's weird. Based on what I saw, I thought Gifu were more impressive in the first half than the second. But obviously, it was 0-0 at half time, and I think was it Asakano had a chance in the first half that was well saved. No, I'm sorry, he plays for Matsumoto. What's the name of the big Takasaki?
Takasaki. Yes.
There we go. Yeah, he used to play for Matsumoto, which is why I've mixed them up. Yeah, Takasaki shot straight at the keeper, didn't he?
That's a good save. Yeah,
it was a good save, but should have buried that. So, yeah, Gifu were on top in the first half, but it wasn't until I think the 50th minute, wasn't it? 5 minutes into the second half, they went in front. Kind of a weird goal because. Was it Leleu? Is that right? Leleu, his corner?
Yes, Leleu. Yeah.
Iroha flicked it on, and then it was kind of going in anyway. But Shota Kawanishi, if you're a striker, you're not going to pass up the chance to score from 1 centimetre.
It's his goal bonus, you know? Got to get
that's bonus. Right. And it was at the end of the ground where Gifu had brought a pretty impressive contingent of travelling supporters. I noticed. I believe the tickets were sold out, weren't they?
It was a sellout. Yeah, which considering, it was in Kamatamari Sanaki's like Eastern European style bowl of a stadium.
Yes.
When I first read it, what, sold out? Are you kidding me? But there are only limited tickets available. But yeah, they sold out. I think there were 200 Gifu fans there.
The only part about that I didn't understand is why wouldn't you just make more tickets available at that point? Obviously, you can't sell more tickets in that section because of the social distancing, but I think the capacity is about 30,000. I'm sure they could have made, would you like 100 more tickets? Anyway, Gifu were in front and everything was looking rosy, but as you mentioned, Gifu like to do things the hard way, don't they, Stu? And midway through the second half, Sanaki had a chance to break, and Ko Yanagisawa, he brought down Sanaki's substitute, Yuki Ikeya. It was just outside the penalty area, I think, although our friend Noah Kenshin Brown was protesting to the referee that it was inside. But the straight red card came out, and Yanagisawa was off. But the free kick came to nothing, and Gifu were able to hold on and get that third straight win, which puts them in much better form than Nagano, I would suggest. What did you think of the red card, Stu? Because this wasn't as clear cut a dog so as in the Nagano game.
Yeah, I think that I think it was a red card. It didn't surprise me, and I think that the players are just duty bound to complain about it, but Yanagisawa didn't complain. I think he knew he made a misjudgment, and
he was in a bad position. He
was caught in a bad position, and I think consciously or not, doing it outside the area. I think it was just outside the area, because it's always that thing where if it was inside the area, I'm not sure if he would have been sent off.
Because of the double jeopardy.
Yeah, because it wasn't. I think it was a genuine. It might have been a genuine attempt to play the ball, but he was just too late on it.
I think if you're Gifu, you probably would prefer. If he's going to be sent off and then you only have to face a free kick, you'd probably take that, wouldn't you?
I think so, And Park Sung-soo saved the resulting free kick, which was it was on his side, but there's a lot of free kicks that go on the goalkeeper's side that somehow go in these days. It's one of my bugbears. Park Sung-soo kept it out, kept a clean sheet. I think it was a sending off. If it had happened at the other end and there wasn't a sending off, I'd have been furious. And so that's always the way I look at it. I think about what if it had happened in the opposite way. And I think it was a sending off. It'll be a loss for Gifu because he's been really good this year. And he's been an ever present, and obviously that run will come to an end this week. But it's three straight wins for Gifu, who, much like the other two sides, just got it done because they just had to. And while they don't have the destiny in their own hands, they've got two home games coming up in the next 4 days, from Saturday, I should say. And if they win those two, it'll set them up nicely for a trip to Nagano a week on Sunday. So it's all getting a bit helter-skelter at the top, isn't it? So
Nagano against Gifu looks huge in round 33, doesn't it? The penultimate match day.
Yeah, one of the other things is that Gifu go to Osaka on the last day. They play Gamba away. But that has... I don't want to speak too far into the future because Gifu might end up getting beat in the next few games. But that final game away at Gamba Osaka under 23... That might be played behind closed doors because Osaka have just gone into some kind of restrictions. They've done it individually because it's not the same in Gifu, it's not the same in Tokyo, but I think the governor there has decided to shut down some... he's issued a don't go out kind of, not warning, but mandate. So I wonder how that'll affect things as well, because I would imagine if promotion is on the line in a usual way, I think Gifu would take, even in Corona times, I think Gifu would end up taking between 500 and 700 fans there.
I was going to make a joke that considering it's a Gamba or Sakura 23's home game, instead of 200 people being there, there'll be zero. It might not make much difference, but I think you're right that the Gifu would take over. But also, it'll be Gamba Osaka's last, you know, the under 23's last game, right, in J3, because they're not coming back. So that might attract a lot more. In normal times, that would probably have attracted a decent number of Gamba support as well, I would suggest. So yeah, that could be a factor. Yeah.
All right then. Yeah. So those are the three teams that are kind of grouped together at the top. Let's take a look at some of the other games, and I think it's Katari Toyama who find themselves in fifth.
I believe so, yeah.
But they had a pretty unconventional win against Seretse Osaka under 23s. Now this game was it was going nowhere until the 85th minute when Matsumoto... What's his name? Nagi? Is that how it's... That can't be right.
Yes, I think it's
Nagi.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Matsumoto Nagi. I've never heard that name before. Put Seretse up with 5 minutes to go. But two goals from Hayate Take in additional time. One in the 93rd minute and one in the 96th minute, I see. Gave Toyama the win. That was quite a wild game. Another wild game involved Raso Kumamoto, who managed to score twice against Blau Blitz Akita, but unfortunately they got turned over to the tune of four goals by the champions. So Akita came away from Kumamoto with a 4-2 win, just to kind of increase their dominance at the top and really put not the knife into Roasso's promotion hopes, but they're now 6 points off Sagamihara with four games to go and in a woeful run of form. I don't think it's looking like Kumamoto are going to do it this year. And yeah, about those two teams, John, I mean, Katale, Toyama are on 47 points, so they're five behind Gifu. Kumamoto also on 47 points. Do you think it's just too late for those teams?
Yeah, I think they're going to run out of matches. I think Toyama have been impressive in patches this season. I mean, I've gone on about this game before, but I watched their home game against Sagamihara where they just dismantled Sagamihara with no problem at all and won 3-0.
Was that Sagamihara's last defeat?
No, I think they lost... I can't remember, but yeah, basically they were much better than Sagamihara, you know, on the night. So yeah, it's kind of weird seeing Sagamihara in second and Toyama behind them, but yeah, that was just one game, you know. And yeah, I think consistency, that Toyama not been consistent enough, and I don't think they're going to do it this year. Hayate Take has had a good season though, hasn't he? I think that puts him on 9 goals, which is not a bad return. So the, you know, we know Shohanai is a good midfielder. So there are some quality players in the team. But yes, I think for Tiamat, it's going to have to be next year now. Same for Kumamoto. I mean, you know, they're 6 points off second place, but their defending is so bad that they are more likely to be travelling in the other direction in the league table, aren't they? Between now and December 20th. So, yeah, I mean, in particular, the fourth goal. I mean, you're a member of the Goalkeepers Union. The fourth goal that Kumamoto gave away against Akita was like, I just don't know. Kei Uchiyama, very experienced goalkeeper. I just don't know what he's doing. He gets caught underneath the ball.
Yeah.
His starting position is terrible as it comes from a free kick. He's in totally the wrong position. And then he is actually in a position to save the chance because the header from an Akita player hits the post. But even though he's standing right there, he's not ready for that. And he knocks it against the post again whilst fumbling the ball. And then it leaves, I think, Yohei Hayashi gets a tap in. So, we like to praise good goalkeeping when we see it. But
we have to call it out when it's not.
Mm. Yeah, I'll mention as well, Han Hogang scored an absolutely superb volley.
He's a player and a half, that boy. He's he must have scored like 5 or 6 goals this year.
I think that's 7 now because he's usually heading in Naoeguchi corners. To see him he scored against Gifu?
Yeah, he scored a volley against Gifu, and I'm trying to remember. I think he scored a penalty against Seretsar. I think he's their penalty taker as well.
Yeah, that volley. Doesn't look, I think if you just glance at his goal, it doesn't look that impressive. But if you watch it a couple of times from different angles, it's not an easy volleying the ball at that height.
Yes.
Isn't, when it's like the ball slightly behind you, a lot of centre forwards have trouble doing that. And he just makes no problem, just you know, straight in the top corner. Amazing.
I think there'll be something that we'll probably have to speak about on an end of season pod is like how many of these players Akita will be able to keep. Like my gut feeling is that they'll keep most of them, but I think J2, possibly J1 clubs wouldn't be doing their jobs properly if they weren't looking at Yudai Tanaka and Han Hogang and Naoeguchi. They should be looking at these players and thinking, well, if Akita have done so well in J3, is there any potential there for them to come up to J2 or J1? I'm looking at you, Vegalta Sendai. You might be able to get some of those players, I would say.
Just on that tip, Stu, before we move on, I want to mention things that make you happy and sad at the same time. How many times am I going to have to watch Hayato Asakawa come off the bench. Score a great goal when the game's already gone away, get the ball out of the net and carry it back to the center circle? Like he's a YSCC graduate, like Naoto Misawa at Tottori. And I think both of these two have just gone from strength to strength this year. And I know that the game was already gone when Asakawa scored, you know, in stoppage time in this game, but I think he's another one who has done well enough that clubs higher up might be looking at him. I don't see any reason why he couldn't do a job in J2, for example.
He's a super sub. He barely starts. I think I'm looking at his stats now. What has he started? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's only started 6 games this year for Kumamoto, but he scored 10 goals. He comes off the bench, and I think that's his role in the team, but I think he's shown enough that he can, you know, he definitely deserves a chance to start up front for a J3 side, possibly even a J2 side.
I feel sorry for him because he's always asked to like rescue games that his teams have like pissed away.
Someone's got to do it. Okay, John, we'll wrap up the other games. Fujieda beat Gamba Osaka's under 23. I think I'm going to ask you about that, the goal in that game, in a minute. Hachinohe and YSCC drew 1-1. Kagoshima United won at Gruja Morioka, and Fukushima United beat Numazu 1-0. Probably not a lot to talk about in relation to those games, but we did see a novelty goal, I think it's fair to say, at Fujieda, right?
Yes, one of my favourite sites in football is do the indirect free kick awarded for the goalkeeper picking up a back pass inside the penalty area. Now, I think it was a very, very harsh decision by the referee. Gamba Osaka's under-23s had Lee Yuno in goal. And he picked up a ball that had touched a Gamba player's foot last. It was obviously not intentional, so maybe it was a harsh decision. But we don't have intention in the handball rules anymore, so perhaps the back pass rules go in the same way. I don't know. Anyway, there's a free kick awarded on the edge of the 6-yard box. All 11. Of Gamba's players were on the goal line. It's a kind of a really good, there must be some good photos of that scene floating around online. And not only was the tableau very aesthetically pleasing, but Tsubasa Yoshihiro, who, by the way, had only just come on the pitch, he'd only been on the field for about 4 minutes, coming on as a sub, the ball was rolled to him and he just blasted it straight into the roof of the net, just as you should do in that situation, and it proved to be the winning goal. So yeah, well worth checking out online. I seem to remember Alan Shearer was good at this. I can't remember who he did it against, but I remember Alan Shearer doing the same thing. But I can't remember the last time I saw that type of goal, the indirect free kick inside the penalty area. So
I can't remember that. In fact, still now, I think there's no point in rolling the ball to someone. You might as, because all the players are just there. If you hit it hard enough, it's going to deflect off someone and go in. I always thought.
I think if you've got someone with Tsubasa Yoshihiro's accuracy, probably tells you what to do, and you use it. Yes, sir. I will mention, Stu, before we wrap up, I got to mention Kagoshima's goal. You mentioned it correctly. They won 1-0 away at Iwate. One of the untidiest goals I've ever seen, like a kind of match of the 70s.
And that's quite a compliment coming from J3, right? That's pretty high praise.
Yes, absolute pinball chaos in the Iwate penalty area. Eventually the ball goes in. I think Noriyuki Sakamoto sweeps it in the end. But just one of those, like Laurel and Hardy, Keystone Cops style goals. Yeah, so the two extremes, I think, in those other games. A very aesthetically pleasing goal and one that left you sort of feeling a bit dirty and used afterwards.
That's J3 for you. That's J3. Okay, we'll look ahead to this weekend's games, John. All 9 games take place on the weekend, 6 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday. On Saturday, with regards to the promotion race, Gifu are hosting Gainari Tottori. Obviously, we've just spoken about how Ken Tajiri likes to make things interesting for teams. Gifu will look to make it 4 in a row in that game, and given that Sagamihara and Nagano don't play until Sunday, they could really turn up the gas on those other two teams. Speaking of those other two teams, Sagamihara travel to Hachinohe on Sunday, and Nagano are also away. They're heading to Yokohama to take on YSCC. John, out of those three games, do you foresee any of these teams slipping up? I mean, on paper, Gifu have the hardest game because they're taking on Tottori at home. But what do you think about those games?
Yeah, I don't think Tottori will be thanking the fixture computer for having Sagamihara away followed by Gifu away in consecutive rounds. That's going to be a tiring schedule for them. So that might help out Gifu. That might play into Gifu's hands a little bit on Saturday. For the Sunday games, yeah, okay. So Hachinohe against Sagamihara, that's second place visiting 15th, and YSCC Nagano versus Nagano, that's third visiting 17th. Yeah, on paper, that should be 2 away wins, shouldn't it? But it wasn't that easy. If we just jump back to the midweek games in J2, Nagasaki and Fukuoka found it hard going, didn't they, in their away games against sort of lower ranked teams. So on paper, that it's a Sagamihara win and a Nagano win, but pressure does funny things to players at this stage of the season. And Hachinohe and YSCC got no pressure. So that they can play however they want. So, yeah, I think Sagamihara will win, probably 1-0. They'll revert to Titans within 1-0. Sure. Yeah. Nagano and YSCC, it should be a Nagano win, but I think they're going to have to work for it, and they're probably going to have to score more than the one goal they did against Imabari in the last round, because YSCC, we know it's pretty chaotic. They like to attack. They don't like defending quite as much. And, I think there'll be a lot of goals in that game. And there's just a chance, I think, that YSCC could shock Nagano. But I do think, to be honest, if I'm being, you know, hand on heart, I think Sagamihara and Nagano will win. But I think Nagano might be sweating until late on.
Interesting. If we just wrap up the other games, the Blau Blitz Akita Championship Tour continues when they host Imabari. Rurasa Kumamoto travel to Iwate. Toyama hosts Kamata Marisaneki. Kagoshima welcome Fukushima. That's a Shima Derby. On Saturday afternoon, Seretso's under 23 host Fujieda. Can we call that a lilac derby? Quite possibly. And Azul Clara Numazu welcome Gamba Osaka's under 23s to Numazu. So John, I think we've wrapped everything up for this G3 pod. Any other business we need to take care of before we say goodbye to the listeners?
No, I think we're good for this week. Thanks for bearing with us while we try and wrap our schedules around the J League. It's been a tough old season, just in terms of just the volume of games coming thick and fast. So yeah, thanks as always for listening and supporting us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, most definitely. Thanks to the Patreons, those of you who support us on Patreon. We really appreciate it, and yeah, we've said it all year, but we'll continue to say it. We understand that there are a lots of not so hidden costs in life these days, but the fact that people use their hard earned to support what we do, it's kind of amazing, and we really appreciate it. And yeah, everybody who listens, everyone who gives us feedback, we thank you all for listening. We thank you for taking the time to interact with us all. Once again, I'd say thank you to John Steele for joining me on this pod. And then, yeah, to you, the listener, please stay safe. Please stay warm, if applicable, and enjoy the football. But until next time, we'll speak to you then. Goodbye for now.